retail. Yeah, it's something that, you know, I think everybody goes, oh yeah, I know retail because I go to stores every day and I have things I like, things I don't like, you know. And, you know, I could gripe on and on about my experiences in retail, but the truth is, it's a tough business out there, isn't it? I mean, everywhere you go, there's a store. This store has the same thing as that store. Sometimes the price is, you know, a little bit different here or there, but, you know, it's just amazing that anybody makes any money at this anymore with all the channels of competition. Well, we're going to talk to one of my colleagues who is definitely an expert on retail. So let's welcome Moin Moyadin. Hey, this is Ron Jacobs here in my office in Redmond for once, where I am sitting here across from Moin, who is one of my colleagues on the team in the industry architecture space. Moin, tell us, how do you say your last name?
Sure. So let me start with my name. I go by Moin Moinuddin. So
that's Moin Moinuddin?
Yeah, Moinuddin.
Exactly. Oh, okay. So it kind of sounds like the first part repeated again.
Repeated again. yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, see, isn't that awful that here I am, we were on the same team, I was across the hall, I didn't even know how to say your last name, but that's, you know, that's the way it is around here. We just say the first name and we're like, hey, Moin, how's it going?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and so you're doing kind of retail industry architecture.
That's right. Yes.
Now, how did you qualify for this? Did you like work in the retail industry or something?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I spent about 7 years in point of sale development. So right out of school, you can say it was pure luck or whatever. My qualification met with a company that used to develop point of sale solutions for retailers. And in fact, the solution I developed is still used by Starbucks. So next time you order the latte, my code, you're still executing the code I wrote.
So do you get like a nickel or something every time I...
That's a secret that I'm not going to talk about publicly.
That would be a great deal because I'm telling you, they are selling a lot at Starbucks.
That they are, definitely. And I'm proud of the code still being in use after almost 10 years.
So the point of sale system is typically like the software in the register plus some server components and back office and reporting solution, that sort of thing?
That's exactly right. So typically a point of sale or a retail store solution involves your front-end POS, point of sale terminals they're called, and then you have they're connected to a back-end store server, which typically has manager workstation, manager-related applications, such as purchasing, inventory tracking, labor management. Those are typical solutions that sit on the store server. But I work mostly on the point-of-sale development, which is in the front, where you're being checked out by a clerk or you're being served by a at the Starbucks by the clerk. So that's the solution that I mostly spent. After that, I spent another 5 years at a payment processing business. So I was one of the key people who really helped in building, architecting a solution to two payment processing. So when you swipe your card at Starbucks, what happens magically at the back end? That's something I worked on. That transaction from the point of sale gets transmitted to this back end, which knows which bank you bank with and forwards it to that bank so that the transaction is authorized. All of this happens with less than 3 seconds, really.
And you know, it's funny because the credit card companies were advertising, you know, faster than cash, you know. Yeah. And for a long time, I'm like, no way, that is not faster because, you know, they print out a thing, they get a little paper and you got to sign it. Okay, that is so annoying. But then I noticed lately, I went through a drive-thru the other day and handed in my card. Right. They swiped it, gave me the food, out the door, no signing, everything. No signing. And I thought, now that's the first time ever it's faster than cash.
You're right, absolutely right. I mean, it's especially considering if you have to get change back and the clerk says, oh, how much I owe you, and takes the money out from different, you know, parts of the till, compared to just swipe the card and out of the door. It's really picking up, especially if you remember, until last 6 months or 1 year or a couple of years, fast food was not accepting credit cards. Reason was they used to have dial-up modems in the store, which would take, you know, the whole noise happens. Yeah. So the credit card processing would take longer than cash. Now that with every store has broadband, they're able to route the transaction over IP and get the transaction processed much more quickly. And what they've also become more intelligent in terms of processing transaction, if the amount is less than certain threshold, they're willing to take the risk and don't want to go into the hassle of having you sign it. So if it's less than $10, they're like, fine, we'll take the risk, but at least the service is much faster.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because nobody looks at those signatures anyway.
Nobody
and all
does.
That.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it hit me the other day when I was going through the airport and I bought something in a little one of the little shops there. I bought a book, and they had one of those little dial-up terminals, you know, so I'm listening, going, you know, and I'm thinking, why didn't they just have, there's wireless in this airport,
wireless,
you know?
Yes, absolutely right.
They could have just had, I can imagine, like, those terminals are now coming out with a wireless adapter built right in, probably.
Right. For example, I think New York City taxis now are going to have these wireless terminals for swiping the card, and right there you get authorization over wireless. Much faster than the whole knuckle buster of getting imprint of your card and the cab driver depositing at the end of the night. By the time you may be out of, you know, cancel your card, he's a risk for him.
Sure.
Now that is out of the way where they can get real-time authorization at the moment.
If they have connectivity.
Yeah, of course.
You know, because that happened to me in, where was it? In Sydney.
Right.
Okay. We pulled into a hotel, you know, and it was, you know, in the downtown area with all the big buildings, and this happened to be kind of like almost like a tunnel between buildings, you know. So he parked right under this tunnel thing there, and he's trying to run my card. It's just not working. I'm going, you know, I don't think you're going to get connectivity here.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I think that retailers, okay, so one of the things that we're thinking about, sort of architecture trends for retailers, and it occurred to me that these electronic transactions, it seems like the retailers would want this. They would want to encourage these electronic transactions, right, rather than dealing with cash and checks and all that, because those things are error-prone. They take a lot of people touching things and getting involved in the process.
Right.
Electronic transactions, way better.
Way better, because they also, now that especially what's happening is they don't have to walk to the bank to deposit the cash or have an armed truck come and take the cash. It's all done electronically where, you know, from your card, money is transferred into the store's account immediately, where there's no risk involved. Once you pay and leave, they don't have to worry about an armed robbery or worry about armed truck coming and taking it. It's money is done electronically, so they don't have to worry about that. That really helps them in reducing the risk. I mean, starting from store clerk to the store manager to the potential robbery, all of that is gone. There is no cash anymore in the till. It's all you have is a bunch of receipts.
Okay, if this is so, I just want to know why I can go to the fast food store, and if I use my debit card, they want to charge me 75 cents to use my debit card. I just did them a favor, okay? And they want to charge me 75 cents. That is really annoying.
Right. It has to do something with the back-end network. So credit card networks are different from debit card networks. So a credit card, for example, goes through a different network through Visa or a MasterCard processing networks. And of course, they also charging a certain fee that is paid by the merchant, not by the consumer. Debit card goes through a different network. There are networks called Star and things like that. They also charge, and some of the merchants, what they want to do is don't want to pay that on their own. They want to pass it on to the consumer, which is really not the right way, because the merchant should take it as part of doing business or in the cost of doing business and just pay up for it. But not all of them do it, and there is really no easy way to get out of it.
You know, it's funny. It's just how things evolved here in the U.S. probably. It may not be that way in other places, but it's certainly like, you know, they're doing it because they can get away with it. Because
exactly
the customers go, oh, well, I want to use my debit card. And you know what? I just say, I have one card, could go either way, right? It could be debit or credit. I say, oh, you're going to charge me 75 cents? Run it as a credit card then. You can pay that fee. I'm not paying it.
Exactly right.
Well, and, you know, yeah, I'm thinking like at the gas station, I filled up my gas tank this morning. This particular chain does not take credit cards.
Gotcha.
And but they want to charge me 45 cents for the privilege of using my debit card. Although I could put cash in that machine, I could give them a big headache, right? And they won't charge me anything for that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I think that's going to change, because what's happening is as more and more consumers are demanding that electronic transaction be acceptable or electronic tender type be acceptable, I will see that there is, I'm kind of seeing that the charges will kind of slowly drop over a period of time. We're not there yet, But you can see that clearly we are becoming a cashless society. I was speaking at a conference recently, and the question I asked is, raise your hand if you have more than $20 in your wallet. Trust me, there are not more than few hands went up because we don't carry cash anymore. We could be halfway around the world from home, still have no cash on us. We are fine.
That's true. Actually, when I go to other countries, I try not to convert cash. And I try to get as little cash as I can because, you know, it's just a pain converting it.
Exactly.
And then when you convert it, they charge you these fees and, you know, all that. And you can't convert the coins. And in some countries, coins are a lot. I mean, you know, go to the UK, you get £2 coins, you know, and you got a pocket full of those. You got some serious money.
You're right.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just griping about my retail things. I have a couple more gripes, but we'll just leave those aside for a minute. Let me ask you about an interesting trend I'm seeing. The trend is self-service in retail.
Yeah.
So now I go to my grocery store, I go to the self-service line. I'm telling you, if there is one of those, I'm going to that line. I love self-service, you know, because I'm usually buying 4 or 5 things, you know. I don't want to wait in line to hand them to somebody. Yeah. I can just go swipe the, you know, and I took my son to Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we go to get lunch, and there's this place where you can get burgers and fries and, you know, that sort of thing, right? Instead of taking me up to a counter where I talk to somebody and tell them what I want, they have a nice self-serve kiosk. It was amazing. Amazingly well done. Very nice visual UI.
Sure.
And the UI prompts me, you know, what kind of things I want. It shows me nice pictures of them. Allows me to change my mind. And then it even does upsell, right? Because it says, like, you know, oh, would you like a drink with that? And would you like the souvenir lid that costs $5, you know, to go with that drink and all those things, right?
Absolutely.
Way better than what most human clerks would do, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, this has got to be a big, big trend in retail, isn't it?
Absolutely, right? Because if you look at retail, it used to be a single channel. That is, you walk into the store, you get your goods in a cart, you walk to the clerk and pay for it. Now what's happening is retail is becoming multi-channel. That is, consumers want same experience in different channels. So when I say channel, the store channel or the self-service within the store, or it could be on the web, or it could be through mobile. So they want same service irrespective of where they want to go. They want the retailers to recognize that it's Ron or it's Moin, whether I'm coming from web, I'm coming from cell phone, or coming from any other way, and also provide same service. So multi-channel retailing is really the trend these days, and self-service, as you mentioned clearly, is picking up big time, especially in US. It hasn't picked up internationally yet because people, it's more cultural than anything else, but in US, people see, for example, yourself, value in going to it, and don't have to deal with somebody, but deal with a machine and have the freedom to do whatever you want. It's really picking up. I think that's where Microsoft has a unique capability in that space. For example, if you look at Vista, right, the whole graphics experience it provides, the end user experience, the kiosks built on Vista are really just amazing. We have seen few demos of it. Of course, it's not quite out yet, but it has amazing user experience that it's providing for an end user. So even through web, the end user experience is much more enhanced if you use the Vista as a, you know, front end user experience.
Well, that's a really important point because as I was looking at that kiosk in Disneyland where I could order my burgers, I was thinking how different this looks than you know, the traditional kind of UI and you know little text and radio buttons and push buttons. None of that.
No, it was purely graphics.
It was very graphic. Yeah. It was animated. Here comes the burger kind of dancing out there, you know. and it shows me things in ways that are going to draw me in and grab my attention. Very nice use of sound in there also. So I think, you know, to make these things work, there's really a science towards building a UI that your average person who walks up on the street can successfully order something from that UI and get it done right the first time. That's a challenge.
It is a challenge, and I think that's where we uniquely qualify, and that's a unique advantage we bring to retailers in terms of having a rich user experience so that people not only are able to do what they want to do, but do it in a much more easy way, even for somebody who's not computer savvy. Like, think about, you know, 70-year-old or 80-year-old grandma walking up to the kiosk. Be able to order that requires not your typical, you know, text-based or radio button-based UI, but more rich UI with graphics, where they're pretty much playing with images that prompt them, that upsell them and cross-sell. At the same time, that UI or that information, that application has information about the person as well. So when I log in, it says, wow, Moin has bought a lot of things. So now I know what he buys in general. He's a gadget person or he's a apparel person. I need to try to cross-sell him. And that's becoming key, is that provide rich user experience, provide customized experience, along with the intelligence used behind the application.
You know, it kind of, I remember a few years ago, I saw a demonstration that Starbucks had done, a demo project where they would, you know, I could go in and set up like the kind of drink that I like to get from them almost every day. Right. Maybe I have three or four of them, you know. And then when I'm in my car on the way to Starbucks, I can, you know, dial up and or go through a web interface or something, right, and say, right, I want, you know, my number one regular today. Then when you get there, it's like ready and waiting. That would have been huge. I would have loved that, but I don't think they ever did it, rolled it out. Maybe it was too visionary.
They know, actually, I think it was kind of ahead of it. It's time. Technology wasn't there quite yet. I think you'll see it come back again. Now that especially you're having mobile devices much more capable with the smartphones or CE-based devices, now people are able to use it more. I think it's going to come back. It was just kind of ahead of its time. It was done during the dot-com boom days when, you know, everything and anything people thought was hyped. But I think it's going to come back, and you will see that experience, again, probably will pick up much more. And it's already happening in Europe much more than in U.S., but it's just a matter of time here.
Well, I think you're right about the mobile devices, because actually I just picked up, finally, about a month ago, this Palm Trio smartphone.
Oh, cool.
And this thing is great, because I can do it. It finally has a usable web interface. You know, most phones I had before, the web, you could browse the web, but you don't want to. This one, actually, you can do it. I can see my email on it and that sort of thing. Now, I'm just picturing if I was in a store or maybe a Starbucks-like place or a fast food place, and there's a big long line of people.
Sure.
If I could just, you know, flip up the browser on my phone and log in and go, I want this. And then somebody from behind the counter goes, hey, Ron, your drink's ready. You know, I would be sold in a minute. I would love that. That would be, and it would be very doable from this kind of phone.
Yeah.
Now,
as
I talk to people who especially look at emerging markets in Asia and other places, they're telling me a lot more people are going to access the web over a device like this than they are over a standard PC.
Absolutely right. China, for example, right? You know, standard PC is much more expensive for a consumer to reach compared to a device like what you have in your hand. It's much more easy for them to use, and that'll be their main source of getting to the web. And in fact, retailers want to tap into that. For example, retailers want to use maybe an RFID or opt-in where you can say, if I walk into a store, I want to be recognized as me, Ron, walking into the store. With that, they can alert the manager saying Ron is in store so that he can greet you, meet you, and try to sell you on new things.
Well, in fact, this phone is broadcasting my location.
Absolutely,
right?
It is.
I turned that on. Right. Okay, so it's a privacy thing. You could turn it off. But that would be very cool if I walked in the store and the store said, oh, here come Ron. We see his phone. You know, get his drink ready, you know, because he's here, right?
He's here. Yeah, absolutely. I think you'll see that coming. In fact, we have a nice video. I think I'll put a link on my blog to it. About what we have shown is that a consumer walks into the store, a store like Target store, for example, and he or she opts in, and her shopping list is displayed to the sales agents in the store because she has agreed to share her shopping list. Now they're able to come up to her, not only help her shop better, but they also know her history of buying pattern, and now they're able to offer new deals or cross-sell her on new things or upsell her new things. So she is happy that she's getting a customized experience. Retailers are happy that they're able to sell more than they would have in a normal instance. And I think it's the best, it's a good thing for both of them.
Okay, so the thing is, in the retail business, there's tremendous competition, price pressure from every side.
Yep.
And so to survive in that business, you've got to find a way to eke out the profit where you can,
right
without annoying people. So there's a lot of amazing science that goes into this, you know, a lot of business intelligence looking at what kind of buyers buy what kind of things.
Absolutely.
And appealing to. So, you know, it seems to me that if you built these kind of systems, they're going to appeal to the kind of buyers that you want.
Yeah.
You know, not the kind of buyers who are like, show me the clearance rack, I want to buy the cheapest possible thing, but the person who wants that better experience.
Right, right. Exactly right. I mean, there is the whole, you know, price management art behind the retailing is that how do you target what kind of prices so that A, you remain competitive, B, you're enhancing your profits or increasing your profits while not compromising your own brand. That's always a big art behind it. And retailers have different types of system in place. The whole PIM, which is called Price Information Management, where and make sure that, you know, for a particular location, for a particular branded store, the item is priced right because they know the demographics of the consumers for that store. And that's what they need to target. And that's where we bring unique capabilities. You know, Microsoft has a huge ecosystem of partners who provide solutions in this area. And that's where we have unique opportunity because SQL Server, especially with its 2005, you know, capabilities, has come up as a really a good BI tool where you can look at the sales data and look at the trends and then change your prices or change the inventory based on what is selling or what is not selling. So these are some unique capabilities that we bring to the retail business.
You know, it's interesting because when I think about every retailer kind of has their strategy.
Sure.
And oh, say like a Walmart, right? I mean, their strategy, they say it every day. I mean, lower prices every day. That's their strategy. Yeah. They're going to drive the price down to the bottom as low as they can get it. And they're going to make money by driving a lot of efficiency in their supply chain and their whole warehousing and distribution networks are amazingly famous for doing that very well.
Yep.
But then you look at a Starbucks who absolutely does not compete on price. In fact, they're going to charge you a really high price.
High price.
And they're going to make you feel good about it when you leave there.
they're going after the service, really.
Well, and the environment, the feel of the place, it's a cool place. You want to be there.
Yep, exactly right. It's more a brand and the service and the customized service they provide, really, to say, you feel good and you kind of display the cup in your hand saying, I drink from Starbucks, right? So that's the whole idea behind that.
Yeah, I don't go to that cheap little place on the side of the road, man. This is, no. But see, the thing that's interesting about that is that as each retailer evolves their strategy for how they're going to make money in the marketplace, these strategies all need the support of the IT systems that are going to give them the information they need to make their strategy work.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. I mean, retailers, especially if you look at the retail landscape, right, they're facing demanding customers. So customers are becoming more and more demanding because of broadband, customers are more educated. They're aware of alternatives, right? They know if they don't get a good service here, they can go to another store. They're very well aware of it. Second is the globalization is bringing competition, new competition. For example, Tesco, which is a large European retailer, is coming to America now, which is really a scary thing for local retailers. Here is like, Tesco is a well-known brand, and it's very famous for its efficient supply chain, and it's a huge retailer. Now they're entering into the U.S. retail. It's already pretty tight business market here. Now you have this huge competitor coming in. On top of that, you have logistical supply chain problems because if you know that manufacturing is moving away from local to far away in the East, you know, Far East Asia, how do you manage your supply chain so that A, you don't have out of stock situation in your store, B, you don't have a lot of inventory in the back of your store lying around. So you need to make sure that you intelligently analysts have termed it as demand-driven inventory management, which is you drive your inventory or you manage your inventory based on demand, not by just somebody walking around the store with a sheet saying, oh, I see some gap here, that means I need to order some soap, or I see gap here, I need to order some pet food. No, it is really based on your sales data, and it's done in a real-time manner. And that's where IT plays a critical role.
Okay, so let's talk about one of the really big disruptions that we see happening in retail and manufacturing.
Sure.
RFID.
Yep.
Now, I'm not really up on this, okay, but I know something is like these little stickers you put on stuff that kind of sends out a But it's a really amazing technology because it sends a signal, but it doesn't have any power source of its own.
Exactly.
How does that work?
Yeah, that's what you bring. That's a great question. I want a little bit elaborate on that. Is that is a simple example of emerging technologies, how they're disrupting the whole value chain or the whole retail business. Because RFID is a good example. Then you have the whole mobile area. Then you have the broadband or the web multi-channel area. That's all of these technologies are disrupting how traditionally retailers used to operate. So now let's get back to RFID. RFID in a simple term is basically a simple chip or an IC, or you can call it, that is embedded in a sticker or in a tag that you put it on an item. And there are two types of RFID tags. It could be an active tag, which means that it's constantly, you know, transmitting certain information, and if there is a reader, it can pick it up. This passive tag, which it sleeps unless you ping it. So a reader says, hey, wake up, give me what you have, you know, stored. And it'll wake up and give you the information to the reader, basically. So these tags have huge potential, especially in the supply chain area. So what happens today is when a pallet pulls in or a truck pulls into the warehouse and they're unloading the truck, somebody is walking around each pallet with a handheld barcode scanner, reading each pallet, then walking back to the, you know, docking station or a workstation and transmitting that information or moving the information into the workstation, then it gets transferred all the way into the system. That's a lot of manual steps here. Whereas RFID, what it can do is, if you have a reader in the door, let's say, you know, docking door, when the truck pulls in and pallet is down, unloaded from the truck, that information is immediately read by the RFID reader and transmitted instantly to your server in the back room. And that can trigger all kinds of workflows and alerts. A manager can be notified saying, hey, truck has arrived and the items you're looking for has arrived. And he can tell his, you know, store floor guys to say, hey, go load up or put it on the shelf. Whatever he has to do, he can immediately work on it. Not only that, now you have inventory updates in real time. So that really helps in management of inventory and supply chain for a retailer. And Microsoft, you know, as always, tries to be ahead of, you know, in the emerging area. And we are building an RFID middleware in this area, which it can help a retailer or a supply chain vendor to build on it a complete solution where you can plug in different readers and provide, you know, it's create great solution from end-to-end and to manage supply chain.
You know, so when I think about the areas that really cost retailers a lot, and a lot of their expenses in the personnel, the people that run the stores,
right?
And the employees.
Sure.
And I can just imagine, you know, around inventory, for a store with thousands and thousands of items on the shelf, you know, keeping track of what they have, what's coming, what's going. The whole inventory process has got to be a nightmare. And, you know, and sometimes you see, just the other day, I went to go to a store to buy something and they had a sign on the door, you know, closed at noon for inventory. So, you know, and you could see inside they had all these people working. And you're going, not only did they have to bring everybody in, but they had to actually shut down the store during regular retail hours, which this was a little small store. Big guys don't do that. But I'm thinking, this is an area where something like RFID would be huge, because you could just walk down the aisle with some kind of a scanner and it would be getting feeds from all these things that were on the shelves saying, here's what's on these shelves.
Yeah, absolutely right. In fact, I don't even have to walk around with a reader. What you do is you provide a reader in the shelf itself. So when an item is picked up by a consumer, the reader in the shelf immediately updates your server in the back and saying, hey, one item is less from the shelf. Now what you can do is put a threshold to say, when a certain inventory of an item on the shelf falls below a threshold, let me know. The store manager or the, you know, floor clerk or whoever it is on the floor employee, and he or she can go back, pick up from the back room, and reshelf the, you know, items that are low on inventory. So this is really already happening. For example, I think the one of the razor Gillette, there, if you look at Gillette, pretty expensive razor blades they have. They range from $10, $20, $30, $40. And they had huge problems in terms of managing their inventory. They're expensive items. People can walk out and not pay for it. So they started putting RFID tags with a reader in the shelf. So when somebody picks up a razor, not only that it updates the server about inventory, but it also notifies the manager that somebody has picked up a razor. It's up to the manager, of course, to check on every one of them, but he could tend to ignore. But at least you have a real-time inventory update happening saying, I'm selling these razor blades, I'm low on the razor blades, I need to go reshelf the razor blades. So that really gives you a real-time management of inventory within the store.
Yeah, and I would imagine that these are the kind of things that lead them to this to avoid the situation.
Absolutely.
Like it happened to me the other day. I go into the store. They got this great sale on something, right? Great sale. I go over to there, empty shelf. There's nothing there.
It's just,
I'm thinking, well, I don't know. Maybe they're glad for that. Maybe they're like, well, we were really taking a beating on that thing. Glad those are all gone because we're not going to sell any more of those. Or I don't know. Maybe they want to sell a lot more because I think they hate to have an empty shelf.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the most, you bring up the most common problem in retail. It's called out of stock. So according to analysts, 17% of the consumers who go to the shops return with a bad experience because the item they're looking for is out of stock. It is sad that you go drive all the way up to the store, you are really enthusiastic about picking up, you know, a particular item that is out of stock. Retailers hate, I mean, they understand that that's a bad consumer experience. They want to do everything they can to minimize that. And that's where a key solution they can go after is the RFID-based supply chain management, where they have a visibility into the store shelf to say, hey, how many items are on the shelf? And if the items on the shelf fall below certain inventory level, I should be notified so that, A, either I can reshelf it or remove the signs that are trying to promote that item, which is I don't have maybe, you know. So you're ahead of the actual inventory level as opposed to providing a bad consumer experience. Because next time, you will just hesitate. I mean, you're like, oh, that store is always out of the stock, so I'm going to go to this other store. Because now consumers have options. They have many, many more alternatives. It's just a matter of 5 miles this way or 2 miles that way. It's all about that. So they need to differentiate by ensuring that they provide a better consumer experience so that consumers keep coming back and they build a loyal consumer base.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, in the because of the thin margins and the competitiveness in the retail industry, you have to make a lot of bets, if you will.
Sure.
You know, how many of those are we going to sell?
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to offer them at a big discount, we're going to have to get a good purchase price from the manufacturer, so
right.
We're going to have to buy big lots of them. So you're making big bets. And so when I go, you know, the other day I was at this this clothing store,
uh-huh.
And a big clearance sale was
okay.
on, right?
Right.
And amazing deals. I mean, I got a pair of pants that would have been $50 normally. I got them for $10, right?
Right.
And I'm thinking, this is a retailer who made some bad bets. They ended up on the clearance shelf because they got to get rid of them. Now they're willing to take whatever they can get for them,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So in that business, they've got to have good information to help them to make the right bets.
Absolutely right. I mean, 2 points you bring up, very good points in this question. One is the edge, which I'll get to it in a second. Second is information analysis, right? It's all about ensuring that you have real-time information at the right time so that your merchandising manager sitting at the corporate is doing the right decisions, right? Taking the right decisions. He's not ordering the pants that are not going to be able to sell in this store, right? So he needs to A, understand overall sales patterns, overall demographics that a store is in, and also the demand. For example, if you order lots of, you know, winter clothing in a summertime, you're sure going to have a lot of inventory in the back room or trying to get rid of them and less than normal price. So he has to have visibility into that. And that's where I would say real-time data movement comes into picture. Because typically what happens, large retailers have 500 or 600 stores, and they need to get that data in real time so that the people who are sitting in the corporate headquarter and ordering these items from halfway across the world are making the right decisions. And that's where I would say BI or the analysis part comes into picture. So second part of the question you had was the edge. That is what I call edges, the stores, or maybe the, you know, storefront or the web front. That's where actually the consumer interaction happens. It's becoming very critical that the people on the, say, you know, floor have all the information they need to make the right decisions. For example, if they're seeing certain pattern, they need to notify the people. at the corporate office so that they're making the right decisions. So the edge needs to be more armed. That's what I recently spoke at a conference about, the importance of edge. That is, consumer interaction in retail really happens at the edge. I am in the store, and that's where I'm buying something. That's where I'm talking to a sales agent. I'm not talking to the merchandising manager sitting in the corporate headquarters. So it is important that salespeople on the floor are armed with the right information and have means to provide the right information back into the corporate headquarters so that the people there are making informed decisions.
So, you know, in the old model, the merchandise manager, you know, gets a report maybe 3 or 4 weeks after the fact, and, you know, then they're trying to make a decision. But things are moving a lot faster than that now. They need much, like you kept saying, real time. We got to get real time information.
Near real time. I mean, the real time is a pretty aggressive goal to have, but even near real time.
Yeah.
What typically used to happen, it's changing, but it's not there yet, is stores do their sales transactions all day, and they store it locally. And at the end of the day, when the store closes, they would create a big file or a big data, you know, file and upload it to the corporate. So imagine the corporate systems downloading all this sales data from 600 stores. And then it'll take another 48 hours just to process, because the volume of data that comes in at the end of the day is huge. And after 48 hours is when the reports are ready for merchandising manager to go through the report to say, oh, what are the items I need to order? That is late for it, for this kind of world we are living in today. They need to be able to make that decision in real time, almost in real time. That is, if an item falls below certain inventory level, our store system need to inform not only the store manager, but also inform the merchandising manager that he or she knows that if they need to order something, they need to order it immediately. So the data movement is becoming extremely critical. Of course, there is broadband is helping to some extent, but the legacy systems are still an issue where they are not able to keep up with the, you know, the real-time information that is coming in.
You know, I read an article about Walmart, and one of the things they said in there is that Walmart requires its district managers from all over the United States to fly to Bentonville, Arkansas, like on every week.
Wow.
And they meet on Saturday morning.
Right.
Okay. And they go over the figures. And they were saying, well, why Saturday morning? Why don't you wait till the following Monday?
Right.
And they said, we want to have all the changes to the merchandising done by Monday morning. Right. So the plan is in effect Monday morning. So they actually think that the time difference of waiting over a weekend is that important that they're not willing to wait. They're going to meet Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. I mean, Walmart has one of the best solutions in place. I mean, because they are really the trendsetter in a retail business. They have near real-time solutions in place. For example, Walmart knows when you buy an item at a Walmart, let's say in Renton here, you know, 10 miles from here in Renton, they would be informed in Bentonville immediately, almost within, I would say, around 10 minutes that Ron has bought this from this store. That's kind of the data movement they have in place. And that's the kind of the, I would say, bar that the rest of the retailers are trying to achieve so that they can get to a place where they reduce the out-of-stock experience for an end user, really. That's what they're trying to, because retailers have challenged getting people into the store. They don't want to turn them around and send them back empty-handed. So the key is to make sure that when somebody walks in, they don't never leave empty-handed. And the way to do it is provide the good user experience. May it be through self-service kiosks you're talking about, may it be through store terminals that are, you know, talking about different provide information on products, or may it be through better informed Salesforce that it knows who you are, it knows what your buying part pattern is, and it knows what products you're looking for and has information about products.
Okay, so just to kind of wrap up here,
sure.
we've gone all over the map here, right? But you've been actually, your job here
is
to think about how do we take the platform, the technologies that Microsoft has and is producing, and apply them to this very challenging space of retail.
Yeah, absolutely right. So my job is to really talk to or focus on retail verticals, especially the technical decision makers. They could be VP of supply chain or CTO or an architect in a retail. Help them understand what kind of capabilities our platform has that they can utilize to build the next generation solution. May it be the self-service kiosk that they plan to build. for example, or may it be the supply chain solution they want to build, and how can our platform help them in building it? For example, one of the things I'm looking at is Office 12, right? The capabilities it has is ideally suited for retailers in doing an enterprise collaboration. For example, use a SharePoint portal within the store where employees are not only able to get real-time information about promotional items, but take online training, and also provide feedback on what they're learning in real time to the corporate systems. That's one way. Second way is collaboration with supply chain. Collaboration with suppliers, that they're able to use SharePoint portal or Office 12 portals to collaborate with suppliers using some standards, industry standards. So those are some of the guidance that I plan to provide. Pretty soon you will see, we plan to launch MSDN, retail-specific site, where you'll see a lot of technical content that we plan to publish about the capabilities of our platform and also examples, some reference architectures on building solutions around those.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that, and I'm sure that the many customers, I've run into a lot of them actually who do retail business, and I'm sure they are going to be eager to see it as well.
Absolutely.
But thanks so much, Moin, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. Enjoyed it.
Moin Moinadine, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Wow, I'm telling you, that retail business, challenging business. Business that really needs information. I think if you're going to succeed in retail, you have got to have the right information to make the right decisions very, very quickly. Because there is so much competition. And so much pressure. And if you get into competing on price alone, man, you're in a tough spot, man. You better drive ruthless efficiency, which is, you know, what Walmart has done. But hey, we are here to help. We're here to help you figure out the right way, the best way, to leverage this platform we're building here at Microsoft to help you. And listen to our cast so you can find out more.